Lake Effect continues on WUWM. I'm Mitch Teich. Every summer, thousands of people come to Milwaukee to celebrate German Fest with a pint or two of Milwaukee's German-influenced beers. Milwaukee's beer barons, Pabst, Schlitz, Blatz, Miller, they've all made an impact in the city. They provided jobs for the community, and they gave back in the form of projects for the greater good. Today, Milwaukee residents attend games at Miller Park, shows at the Pabst Theater, and concerts at Eline Hall. But Milwaukee's first brewers were not German. They were Welsh. That's where Brenda McGee picks up in her new book, Brewing in Milwaukee. She tells Lake Effect's Eleanor Peterson about the Welsh brewers that started Milwaukee's beer legacy.
During the 1800s, especially gearing towards the 1840s with the immigration, a lot of the immigration, there was a mixture of Europeans as well as British. And they had their ale that they were brewing. And it was a different flavor, was a little bit weaker than German lager. And so during the next decade of immigration, there were more Germans dominated the development of the city. And seeing a need and not accustomed to the British drink, they felt that they could make an improvement. They could also cultivate their customer base, and they could make a lot of people more happy. So that was the difference in the way to brew the beer and the traditions behind it.
So then what attracted the Germans to Milwaukee?
It was quite a few things. There was the conditions at home in Europe. Potato famine also had some degree effect in Europe. There was just the government policies, which included registration for military, and they wanted their sons to not have to serve, so they might have sent them over to America. There was also new opportunities, and the state of Wisconsin had deliberately set out to invite immigrants, especially to Wisconsin. They delegated programming for them. They set out flyers, which gave all of the different assets of Wisconsin, inviting different people to come over, whether it be for logging, working in the factories, or whatever it might be. They dispersed these on the East Coast, as well as every language that was possible, and passed them out in Europe. So you see these postings, you think that there's opportunity, you'd like to go, you're the youngest son, you're maybe a widow or husband and father who needs to make a better life for his family. So they immigrate. So there were various reasons.
How did Milwaukee become famous for the brewing?
There were quite a few factors. We had, at the time of the becoming famous aspect of it, we had the four breweries, which was Pabst, Schlitz, Blatz, and Miller. And it was one particular event in the city of Chicago, a wonderful neighbor to the south, that actually propelled the city of Milwaukee into the limelight, and that was the Great Chicago Fire. The fire that roared for 3 days through wooden buildings devastated the city, including their drinking water and Lake Michigan. Polluting that, they had absolutely no way to get any beverage at all. They had no water. There were breweries in Chicago as well. They couldn't function because of the lack of pure water. It was actually Schlitz that said that he needed to step up and help his neighbors to the south in Chicago after the fire. And it was a twofold thought. One, again, helping a city that had been devastated. And two, it also was able to move his product. And it was a smart move on his part. And at that time, everybody drank beer. Women drank beer. Children drank beer. It was a beverage that, through history, has been able to sustain life for various reasons, and the biggest being that the water is boiled or the water is cooked, which allows for all the bacteria or the negative bacteria and other germs and stuff like that to be drawn out. So that movement for him and the thankfulness, the citizens of Chicago, when they remarked that Schlitz is the beer that made Milwaukee famous, was because of that. That he had gone out of his way to do this. He was helping another city. And so that was their response to it, that they were so appreciative of his goodwill and his gesture. That saying then again has been one that they used for marketing purposes. And it's what we know today.
And what I find really interesting while reading this is that the beer barons had such an amazing impact and presence in the city. It wasn't just breweries and beer cans and beer bottles, but they actually erected buildings and gave back to the community. Which beer baron had the biggest presence in Milwaukee?
Well, I think there's, if I could call it a tie, between Pabst and Schlitz or the Ealing family. I think it would have to be the two of them because they have contributed so much to the arts, to the social status of the city. All of the breweries in some way formed the idea of whom they wanted to service. In general, they wanted to service the whole city of Milwaukee. But they were patrons of specific areas. Most of them had their orphanages, and they had the Holy Sisters of some other type of organization. So as far as the social aspect of things that they contributed for, that was important to them, as well as giving back to the community in the form of arts and other organizations that benefited the citizens of Milwaukee. That was one thing that they had felt was important to them. The city had given to them their hard labor. The city had given to them their community. They had accepted them, and they wanted to give back in return. And so over time, we have all of these different contributions.
Then how did they treat their workers? Were the working conditions good quality or not as much?
I think that would have to be how you're looking at it. If you're looking at the decade of the 1880s, mm-hmm. to just say that it was adequate, you know, to judge how the workers were working, the facilities in which they worked in, the conditions in which they worked in, probably at the time would have been, you know, wonderful. If you look at some of the images that are in the book, you'll see that there are what look like hundreds of people in one particular department or area. But they're all doing assigned different tasks. And that given because of the technology that was available at the time. Mm-hmm. As technology progressed, you see that there were less and less individuals that are working the same departments because of technology. And I would say that conditions are, for each decade of business, I would think that the conditions would have changed, the work environment would have changed, as well as the requirements of the job would have changed. And so I think that individuals would say in the 1860s to the 1880s, it was great to have a job, no matter what it was. Mm-hmm. And each decade later, or each term later, everyone appreciative of their positions and their jobs. But again, there were different things that changed that. Organizing into labor unions, that happened early on. Having women organize in a labor union took a little bit longer to do that. Each of the departments, they were organized differently as far as not only the work environment, but how they were to progress. And, for instance, women were highly regarded in the work field because of their agility and the fact that they were very dependable. They were able to do jobs that men couldn't do and vice versa. So the men had the jobs that needed to be more burlesome, you know, heavier cask to take, whereas women had the jobs of, you know, cleaning bottles perhaps, putting labels on bottles, things where their dexterity was highly valued.
One of the things I found interesting while reading this book is the mention of technology and how much of an impact these beer barons had. And one thing that I saw was that some of them actually use clay or ceramic bottles, and then they switched over to glass bottles. Why did they use ceramic bottles at first, and why did they change to glass bottles?
When you think about the technology and what was adaptable, if you see the ceramic bottles or jugs, I think would have been used throughout Europe. And that is what they had to make their vessels. It was easier. You can just literally grab it out of the ground and mold these vessels to accommodate whatever the beverage or ingredient that you needed to put in there. And they, not only could they keep the drink or the contents colder, that it was also prevented light to taint the ingredients. It would be easier to, they were quite heavy, so you could reuse them frequently. When they developed the glass bottle, it was developed because they had been At that point, just before the glass bottles were introduced, they were transporting via kegs. And so whether it be wagon or on rail, there were many instances where the kegs would become broken and the product is then ruined. You can't sell it. You can't pick it up.
Right.
You can't do anything with it. So inventing and using a dark, again, dark to prevent the light from going through to the ingredient, as well as easier to use. So it's easier to handle. They're not quite as heavy. They're a little bit slimmer as far as the size. It's a little bit easier to hold, easier to process through the factory as far as bottling and then packaging. So you've got two similar ingredients for the same purpose. They prevent the light as well as easier to handle and process.
So who was the first to bottle his beer then?
That would have been Blatt's Brewery. Again, he was interested in marketing. He wanted to reach as many cities as possible. And whether you're sending them via rail or through wagon, on a lot of occasions, they had their beer barrels would have been broken. And to save the product, to again, bottom line is essential, that he came up with a new idea to change what had previously been used as the clay bottles and go with a dark glass bottle. And so Blatt's has been known to be the first to bottle his beer.
And speaking of packaging, I am just curious, did Pabst ever actually win a blue ribbon?
No.
They never. No.
Everybody thinks that because they do have the ads and their marketing represent the blue ribbon. It's not. They did win quite a few gold medals that was given out at the World's Fair, but it was a marketing ploy that if you win the gold medal, you want people to notice it. You're not going to have the medals around. So to refer that same thought to the bottled ingredients, the bottled beer, you would tie these little ribbons around the neck of the bottle, and people would, you know, curiosity would get the best of people, and they say, well, what's that? Well, you know, the conversation might have been, well, that's the beer that won the gold medal. But, well, I'll have that. I'll have that blue ribbon bottle. And so it just kind of caught on. It was a frequent saying and, again, another marketing ploy that worked.
Well, Brenda McGee, brewing in Milwaukee is going to create a lot of interest. So thank you so much for being on Lake Effect.
Thank you very much.
Brenda McGee is a historian at the Milwaukee County Historical Society. Her new book is called Brewing in Milwaukee. She'll sign copies and talk about it as part of the Milwaukee Public Museum's Food and Froth Fest tomorrow. She spoke with Lake Effect's Eleanor Peterson. Another break now, and then a family history of a major tragedy inspires a stage play decades later. This is Lake Effect.